dropped all notions of moderation, and we're just giving away books like crazy. And so if you call the pledge line, 244-9455, make a pledge to support the station at the basic membership level, $40 a year, or if you're a senior citizen or student, $25 a year, we will give you a book. These are brand new hardcover, first edition, high quality, grade A, Focus 580 approved books, fiction or nonfiction. You can have your pick. Those are the two categories. We have too many titles. We just can't list all the titles. But all you have to do is go to the telephone and pick up the telephone and then dial it, 244-9455, and tell the person who takes your pledge which you would like, a fiction or nonfiction book. And it's pretty much that. That's all there is to it.
All right. And there also is another reason that you should make your pledge this morning if you haven't done it already. We do have a challenge for Focus 580 for this morning. Challenge comes from a couple in Urbana who think Focus 580 is the best interview program anywhere. Thank you very much. Anywhere they've listened. The small qualification that they know of, it's the best program that they've heard. And they said that they would make a special gift of $200 if 20 others would pledge today. And I'm sure that we could do that, because in the past when we've done shows and Philip and Tanya have been here and we've done the big book giveaway, mm-hmm. we have done more than that. Mm-hmm. So we'll see if we can do that.
Well, it's exciting, too, because you don't know what book you're going to get. I mean, that's kind of actually a feature. We think it's not a weakness. It's a feature. That's right. Because actually, they're all great books, and we will hand select them for you and send them your way. And, it'll be a great surprise. So give us a pledge call right now, 244-9455, fiction or nonfiction. You can also actually go online to our website and make a pledge that way, too, and just, note that you would like a fiction or nonfiction book, WILL.UIUC.EDU.
Did we give the phone number?
244-9455.
Oh, okay. Good.
I should mention, I've seen these books stacked up in your offices,
Yes.
And I should say that they seem like the ideal book. They seem very well-behaved, stacked nicely. But inside, they're unruly as all should be.
That's the problem with reading. Read books, you start getting ideas.
You never know what's going to happen next.
It gives you views of the world that you would not ordinarily have. Yeah. And that's why we urge you to be careful. Be careful what you read. It can change your life. That's all I'm saying.
Yeah, but you got to be careful around David's bookshelf, too, because they're so stacked up that,
Well, some small seismic disturbance, it could all come tumbling down.
That's right.
All right. Well, thank you very much. And we want to say welcome to Philip and Tanya. Thanks for being here.
Thanks for having us.
We certainly appreciate it. It's always fun to have you here. Well, which of you would like to begin?
You want me to begin?
Yes.
Philip is deferring. He's saying, Tanya, all right.
I tell you what, I'm so excited about this book. It's called The Untelling. It's by the university's own Tayari Jones. Mm-hmm. And I can't tell you, this is one that I cried. This is one that I cried at the mm-hmm. end, for sure. And Philip's real worried about me
you promised.
Giving too much away. Yes, and I promise that I will not give too much away. If you were at a reading last week, I won't give away anything more than that. I'll set up the story.
What a great reading, too.
It was an incredible reading, and I almost, honestly, I had a hard time. I don't even know what to read from this, because I know she was on the program. She was on Afternoon Magazine last week.
Just a brief, and I think she had a little bit of
laryngitis.
So Celeste did a short interview, and I think that the plan is that later, maybe this summer at some point, she's going to come back and they're going to do a longer interview.
Right. Great. Because I'm thinking maybe I won't read from it because she reads so beautifully, mm-hmm. and I almost hate to read after I've heard her read from it and then later hear her on the radio reading from it and feeling inadequate. So I will tell you what it's about. It's about a young black woman living in Atlanta. I identified so much with this book, you guys, and it's such a strange thing. I'm obviously neither a black woman nor have I ever lived in the South, but there's something so human about these characters and the things that they've experienced. And I really, because of certain things in my life, I've really, really identified with the main character in this book, whose name is Aria. It's Ariadne from the Greek, actually. Mm. And but it's been shortened to Aria. And she has... well, the book begins with an accident. She and her older sister, Hermione, and her mother and her father, and her baby infant sister, Genevieve, are all on their way to a dance recital. And there's an accident. A car is coming towards them. the father swerves and hits a magnolia tree. And that's the first time you hear of the magnolia tree. And the magnolia tree is a wonderful metaphor throughout the entire book, from beginning to end. And the cover of the book demonstrates it actually very nicely, too. An open magnolia blossom and then a closed one. In the accident, she's left with her father in the car. Her older sister, she's about 10 years old at the time, if I remember correctly, and her, and it's in first person, her older sister and her mother, who's holding the infant baby, get out of the car, run for help, tell her, stay here with your daddy. And he's hurt but conscious. While she's in the car with her father, and you get all this right away. I'm not giving too much.
No,
away.
No, no. Okay. It's right there. No, it's the first chapter.
It's the first. Yeah. It's not even a chapter. It's the prologue. Yeah. So they're in an accident. She's alone with her father in the car. She is talking to him. He's a good father. He's a very good father. She loves him very much. And he wants her to talk to him. She has a red velvet cake in her lap that they're bringing to this dance recital, and of course it's been ruined. And he just wants her, she's scared, and he just wants her to talk to him. Tell me about the cake, tell me about anything. And he knows, you can tell, he knows he's much worse off than is apparent. And he's just sort of waiting for the for everybody to get there. She doesn't do it, though. She won't talk to her father. She's scared. She's 10. She puts her fingers in her ears, and she sings. She sings everything she can think of. Nursery rhymes, Mary Had a Little Lamb, everything she can think of. And you don't realize how important a moment that is for the rest of the book. She loses her father and also the infant sister. She has this tremendous guilt, this tremendous weight throughout her life and throughout the entire novel, because she did this in the car with her father in his last dying moments. And I can tell you that this is where I identified with it. This is where I really identified with the book. I thought, my God, to go through that and to live and then have that weight on you. So she's full of guilt, but she's this wonderful person. And the book goes back and forth between her childhood, when she was about this age, and her adult life, where she is living in Atlanta with a good friend of hers, Rochelle, and she's teaching literacy to teenage girls. And this book is really... it's about more than race differences, although there is some in there. It's really a book about class differences within the Black community. And it kind of gives you an opportunity, actually this and the book I'm going to recommend after this, both give you an opportunity, I'm saying, as a white woman, this world that you feel simultaneously isolated from. But that's the power of reading, is that you get a window into this world that you would otherwise not be welcomed into. And you see it all around you, but you never can really understand it. And this book lets you in, you know, no matter who you are. Mm-hmm. It lets you in.
Yeah.
The title is, boy, this is a brilliant title. It's a book about secrets. I'm not going to...
Okay. You promised and I believe you.
I promise. It is a book about secrets and about how the weight of a secret, no matter how bad the thing is that you're trying to hide, and how awful that makes you feel, and how sad. Mm-hmm. Nothing is as detrimental to you, and nothing is as hard as having the secret itself.
Yeah.
And that releasing that secret is incredibly empowering. Mm-hmm. And the end, you know, I was worried about the end of this book because I was worried that a certain thing might happen that seemed obvious. And boy, did I underestimate her. She ended this book exactly the right way. Yeah. Mm-hmm. I just love it. And now I want to read Leaving Atlanta as well.
No, that's a terrific book.
Her first novel.
Which won the Zora Neale Hurston Prize. One of the best novels of the year by the Washington Post.
So this book, again, what's the title of the book?
The Untelling.
The Untelling.
Perfect title.
And I am told by Harriet Williamson that Tayari will be making a return visit to the Afternoon Magazine on June 2nd in the 1 o'clock hour. So it'll be a longer interview. And I think that Celeste told me that she, after having read this book, that she also wanted to read the first novel.
Oh, yeah.
And perhaps they'll talk about that. And Tyree will be feeling well, and she won't have laryngitis.
You know,
there's
something that she said, and or actually, I didn't hear her say it, but at her signing last week, Rick Powers introduced her, and he quoted her. And I don't want to totally misquote her, so I'll just paraphrase. But she said something that I thought, my God, if more writers would do that, people would read more. she had said, you know, I don't want to write a book that my sister can't read. And I said, amen. I mean, this is a book that's very literary and yet accessible to everyone.
Yeah.
I mean, she definitely has a gift for this. I think too often...
Can I just say, I don't know if that's the case. I think accessibility is one of the absolutely hardest things that a writer can do, is to write something that's deeply serious and at the same time highly readable.
Yeah, yeah.
I think a lot of writers who aren't so good hide behind their inability to be accessible and say that it's actually to write a difficult book is to be truly serious. And I don't believe that.
I don't believe that at all.
We need to make a small microphone adjustment.
Oh,
can you tilt it up a little bit more? Like, that's pretty, good.
That's good.
Very good. It was just, it was sort of pointing down at the ground. And
guilty of improper microphone tilt?
It's Philip's magnetic personality.
They have medications for that now. So I'll share some that I've gotten over the internet with you later. Our guest this morning here on Focus 580, Philip Graham and Tanya Leotsakos. It says Antonia here on my schedule. I don't know where that came
from. Antonia, that's my name.
Oh, Antonia. Mm-hmm. See, what we've never called you that.
No, and you needn't. It's just
Antonia,
my full first name.
Yeah. Antony. Tanya Leotsakos from Pages for All Ages. And Philip is writer and teaches writing here at the U of I. And every once in a while, they're here on this program, and they bring along books that they have been reading to share with. And if you have not heard this program before, there's this sort of dynamic that goes on between them.
We're Tanya, all friends.
she reads books, and she gets real excited, and she wants to tell you about it. And Philip, this makes him very nervous. Because
I left last time. Remember? I had to leave the room.
That's true, actually.
Did leave the room
last time. Wasn't that because it was a book that you were going to?
It was a book he was very excited to read.
You didn't want to hear anything.
Which is fair. That's fair.
Okay. Okay.
And Philip's always, he gets
but
a little nervous.
I did
nervous.
Look longingly through that window. You guys
that's true. Yeah. And since you only would have seen Tanya's back, there could be no lip reading. Okay. Well, anyway, we're here. We're talking about new books. We're very glad that they're here. It's always fun when they're here. So they have books to share. And also, again, I do want to mention, too, that if there are people who are listening and you'd like to talk about something that you've read lately, you can do that. Same deal as always. Same number that we always use. And that's 333-9455 and toll-free 800-222-9455. Philip, your turn.
Yes, I've got a very interesting book, and I want to sort of preface it by how do you find books? You know, I mean, how do you – because this is a book by a writer, Giorgio Manganelli, an Italian writer who's actually passed away a couple decades ago. How do you find a book like this? Well, I was reading Harper's Magazine. In the beginning of Harper's Magazine, they have these excerpts, and I read an excerpt from this book, and I said, I got to get this. And actually, it wasn't an excerpt. It was a complete novel. Excerpted in this magazine, because this book, though it's only 200 pages long, is called Centuria 100 Ouroboric Novels. And the author claims that every one of these very short pieces, which is only a page and a half long, is actually a novel.
I remember now he was telling me about this.
So this is a collection of 100 one-and-a-half-page novels. And in the back, the author is quoted as saying,
of his book, I have the feeling that Centuria's little stories are a bit like novels from which all the air has been removed. And that might be my definition of a novel. 40 lines plus 2 cubic meters of air. I've settled for simply the 40 lines. They take up less space. And with books, of course, you know that space is always an enormous problem. And the thing I love about the picture of the author above this quote is he's in his library and the books are stacked way high above them. So I'm going to read 2 and maybe even 3 of these novels. You can tell somebody today. Somebody read me 3 novels today over the radio. You know?
And it only took, it was a matter of minutes.
Yes. Maybe I'll start with this one. And I should say these novels are all very different. Some of them are fantastic. Some of them are deeply, deeply emotionally astute about relationships. Some of them are historical in nature. This one, well, I won't describe what this is. This is novel number 53. This is not a properly human place in the sense that its inhabitants are not human beings and that their notions concerning humans are vague, transmitted by ancient storytellers or invented by merchants, geographers, falsifiers of photographs. Many who possess a relatively higher level of culture do not believe in the existence of human beings. They say it's a question of an old and fairly silly superstition, and in truth, a conviction that human beings exist is mainly current among the lower classes. Children, too, believe in the existence of human beings, with the result of there having arisen a dense body of fables which describe their protagonists as men. The actions of the humans in these fables are quaint and droll, but all the same, in their own way, sinister. The humans weave unreasonably through rational plots. But the most singular and vivacious industry to have been inspired by the tradition of tales about human beings is the making of masks and puppets. Finely crafted objects are produced and sold not only for the delight of the children, but also as ornaments for the homes and palaces, even of those who, having studied, do not believe in the existence of men. These masks and puppets cannot, of course, reproduce the features of human beings which no one has ever seen, and which perhaps do not exist. Recourse must therefore be taken to the various traditions, to old, absurd picture books, and finally to imagination. So the faces given to human beings always have holes through which to see, generally 2, but randomly placed, one at the summit and one at the feet, or in the middle, which is to say in the midriff. Humans have an upper part which is circular or square in form, with at times another part attached to it, and members below for grasping and walking. From somewhere or other they emit sounds by way of which they communicate. And here the artist's imaginations take free rein. There are those who fashion trumpets that emerge in tufts from the human summits, or holes arranged as on flutes and ocarinas. For hearing, they have a kind of cartilaginous orifice situated anywhere. Puppets that represent sick human beings are particularly popular, even though it is difficult to imagine diseases of the imaginary. Some are covered with boils, with sores, secreting vital fluids. They have cavities through which they cannot see, chipped flutes that emit no sounds, members that do not touch, that neither grasp nor ambulate. All the same, some suppose humans to be immortal. They venerate those masks and puppets, and if they judge themselves imperfect or disrespectful, they reverently burn them. David's looking. What's going on? Okay, so let me try another one. Novel number 81. In the city governed by the bloody princess, all the men fall sooner or later in love with her and present themselves at court to ask for her hand in marriage. She never says no, but poses a question to the man who asks for her hand in marriage. At times the question is complicated. At times it is simple, precisely like the questions asked in elementary schools. But no matter what the question is, the suitor will inevitably make an error, perhaps an irrelevant error, but an error which never escapes the princess, and the suitor will be put to death. On the following day, a new pretender will present himself and will have no different a fate. In reality, the princess is a tender and affectionate woman who would have no greater desire than to marry a fine young man who possesses neither title nor fortune, and to abandon her terrible task. since indeed it is nothing other than a task imposed upon her. The princess, in fact, must obey a bloody king, who supplies her with her questions, examines their solutions, indicates the inevitable error, and then as well imparts the order to proceed to the execution of the audacious suitor. But the bloody king in turn curses his evil task, and would hope for nothing better than to be able to read the classics, and to voyage in search of ancient cathedrals and books which men have forgotten. He would never wish the death of anyone, and not infrequently he sheds his tears along with his much beloved princess, but he must obey the bloody emperor. Every week the emperor summons the king and inquires as to how many men have been put to death and in what way. And when the king describes the horrid fate of those cautionless young men, the emperor nods in assent as he listens, as though everything were going precisely as he desired. And in closing he congratulates the king, who in his heart of hearts is tearing his hair and cursing both the emperor and himself. In reality, the emperor is a hearty, corpulent fellow who loves the hunt and good, rich foods, wine, and bouts of after-dinner song. He plays with the dogs and cats and makes a point of being generous to the poor. But he, too, must obey. Every month he leaves his castle and travels to a place in the high mountains at the mouth of a cave which he dare not enter. But standing in place on the threshold, he recounts aloud the number of people put to death and where and how. From inside the cave, a voice responds with growls and roars, and might even be the voice of a dragon or of a volcano or of a ghost. Strangely, that voice subsides into a kind of murmur, which has something kind about it. The emperor then wraps his cape around himself and sets out again toward his castle, wondering who it may be he obeys, whether a demon or a god, and if what he obeys is itself a demon who obeys a god, or a god enslaved by the devil.
Again, the title and the author.
The title is Centuria, C-E-N-T-U-R-I-A, 100 Ouroboric Novels. And Ouroboric is referring to Ouroboros, the snake that eats its tail. And so these are a lot of these stories circle in and back on themselves. Or should I say novels? So, and the wonderful thing is you could read this book and then tell someone you read 100 novels last week, you know? It's very impressive to say that.
See, this is one of the things that I like about having these guys here. I don't know that I ever on my own would have encountered this book.
Never, yes. Not in a million years.
And it's true of some others that Philip and Tanya have talked about. That's the great thing about the show. We're sharing these with you, and I know that people have enjoyed these recommendations in the past. They will be on the website, by the way. Mm. So if there's something that passes by you, you get it written down later, you lose the piece of paper you wrote it on. If you can get to our website, will.uiuc.edu, the titles will be there. You can also pledge on the website if you might want to do that, or you could call us right now at 217-244-9455 and make a pledge. Maybe you've been thinking about it. All this week, you've been listening to us talk about all the reasons to support the station, and you said, you know, I'm really going to do that. I'm going to do that. I'm kind of busy right at the moment, but I'll get to that. Well, if you haven't done it, this would be a great time to do it because we have a challenge going, and if you like to read, we can set you up with a book. All you have to do is call us, 244-9455. Now in the studio, Jack Brighton, the guy who's in charge of our web operation, producer emeritus, Focus 580, occasional substitute host. Mm-hmm. So, we're giving away books.
That's right. Fiction or nonfiction. And I actually was informed that we also have a stock of titles from recent interviews on Focus 580. So, you can select either recent interviews on Focus, those books that were featured, their authors were interviewed, or fiction or nonfiction. So, just tell the phone volunteer when you call to make your pledge, which you would like. 244-9455. Now we know from research, and we like research here, that it takes a certain number of mentions for people to actually respond to the call to support the station. And, you know, it may take a dozen or more or a couple hundred, who knows.
Could take years.
That's exactly right. I mean, people will listen to the station for years before it finally deciding, yes, I'm going to, make a small contribution. That's all that's needed to become a friend of WILL to support the service that I've derived so much enjoyment from. And so, you know, the book giveaway thing is just a little extra incentive maybe to kick you over the line from someone who formerly just listened and said, oh, yeah, I should do that, but never actually did it, to somebody who actually does do it, pick up the telephone and make the call, and we'll send you a hardcover new first edition book from the Focus 580 Library. 217-244-9455. And David Teal, who's our TV program director, is in our Pledge Center. And David, I know we have had at least a couple of calls this hour. How's it going?
We've had three people so far take us up on the book challenge. And we do have a challenge that we're trying to reach during Focus this morning. We've got a couple in Urbana that think Focus 580 is the best interview program anywhere they've listened. Anywhere they've listened. And they will make a special gift of $200 if 20 others pledge today. So we may not be the best interview program anywhere in the world, but anywhere they've listened, we certainly are.
Well, why are you qualifying it? I hear some scoffing going on. It's a great show. Come on.
No, yeah. It is.
If anybody's going to scoff, it's going to be me. The host. It's my show.
That's right. No, of course. I think it's the greatest interview show ever in the history of the world.
Thank you. And that's about time. You know, it's more like it.
In any case, they will donate $200 additional dollars when we hear from 20 this morning, and that's a pretty reasonable goal considering we're giving away free books. So we've already had at least three. There's somebody on the phone right now. I don't know if it's a call for the AM station or the FM station. But we want you to help us toward this challenge and to participate in the book giveaway. And as my notes say, it's the Cinco de Mayo book giveaway, because, of course, this is Cinco de Mayo. And I wondered, do we have any appropriate music for Cinco de Mayo book giveaway?
Well, we'll work on that.
Just want to remind folks, too, we're working toward a goal today of $90,000 overall for this drive. And right now we're at $73,116. So well on the way, but a lot of work to do, and that $200 would sure help. And your call right now at 244-9455 would sure help.
Yeah. It will help us make the challenge, and I don't want to make light of the challenge at all, because I don't know who it is that have issued the challenge. All I know is that there are a couple of people who like the show and think it's a good program, and I appreciate that very much. And I wanted to say thanks to them. And again, if there are other people, if you've been listening to Focus for months, weeks, years, however long, and if you like what we do, and if you're not a supporter of the station, we'd like to hear from you this morning. You'll help us meet the challenge, so we'll send you a book.
Can I just say something here? Because this is funny. You know how one of the things about books, as we were saying before, is you read a good book and it makes you see the world differently.
Yeah.
You know? And this radio station has become such an integral part of my daily existence that, like a familiar room or a picture on a wall, I can imagine people no longer realizing how important it is to them. You know what
mm-hmm.
I'm saying? I mean,
yeah.
You simply, because it's part of who you are and part of your mind and part of your expectations
your daily
ritual, that it just seems like something that you don't notice. Mm-hmm. But I think, it's kind of a drag to hear everybody saying, send this money. I think, this is a moment to realize that, that picture on the wall is actually quite beautiful. And, the room that you're in is, filled with things that you love. And this radio station does its job so well that it becomes, I think, so familiar to people inside themselves that I think you have to stop and realize just how incredibly valuable. I don't know how I would exist without this radio station, frankly. I listen to it all the time, and it's very important to me.
We need to get, Jack, more writers on the show.
I know many people who say that.
To talk about it. Well, I meet people all the time who say very nice things about WILO.
Yeah.
And it's really nice to hear. Because, sometimes when you do this kind of job, we sit here in this little room and we talk.
And you don't know who's listening.
And you don't know who's listening. Yeah. And at least I'm lucky I do a program like this where I get some feedback. People do call in. So I do know that there are some people listening. But you never really know about who it is you're reaching,
what
the impact
them.
Is, how you're affecting them. Are they liking it? Are they thinking that this is terribly boring? Are they, you just don't know. And this is one way, by being a supporter of the station, this one way people can say, yes, I like what you do. It's not just Focus 580, but I like the Afternoon Magazine and Morning Edition and all of those programs that you may listen to throughout the week and on the weekend. It is one way that you can say, yes, I think that you're doing a good job, and I'd like to see that continue.
I'll crack the whip here one last time with a phone number to call for the pledge, 244-9455.
It's a real whip. It's a real whip. He's got
Yeah, well.
Got to be careful.
Please do respond to that and you know, help support the station and get a free book, 244-9455.
All right, back to it here. Our guests, Philip Graham, Tanya Leotsakos. Philip is professor of English here at the U of I and is writer himself. And Tanya works at Pages for All Ages Bookstore. And every once in a while, they're here on the program, and they bring books with them to recommend. And we'll just continue. Back here, I think, to Tanya. And you say, I don't know if this connects somehow to the very first book that you talked about.
Here's how it connects. Yes. It's called Break Any Woman Down. It's a collection of stories by Dana Johnson. Never heard of this book before in my life. Never heard of Dana Johnson. But after I read Tayari's book, I went to her website immediately and said, you know, that's what Philip was saying about how do you find these books? How does anyone – well, if I when I read a book that I really love, I always check to see if the author has a website and to see what they've read and what they, you know, are interested in, because I figure, you know, whoever they are and whatever's coming out of them in their writing – has been influenced by the things that they've read in the past. So I always like to see read books recommended by authors that I like. And this was one of the books on her website that she recommended. And when I saw Philip this morning, he said he recommended it a year ago, and I don't even remember.
A year or two ago, yeah. Actually, I've been trying to get her to submit work to Ninth Letter,
the
magazine
fantastic.
I'm fiction editor for. And I think I'm going to get something eventually. But
that would be wonderful.
And she is coming to give a reading next year at the program here. Audrey Petty, a colleague of mine, is bringing her in.
The whole collection, I love the, as you guys know, I really love the form. I love short fiction a lot. And I rarely read a whole collection of stories, though, beginning to end. Rarely. I always, you know, that's one of the things I like about it. A little story here, a little story there, and you can have a whole experience in just a small amount of time. But I rarely just go from beginning to end and read all the stories. Well, I certainly did with this one. I read it in a day. They were all excellent. I have an etiquette question before I read from it. When we have language in a passage.
I can do beep if you just let me know when it's coming up.
We do have to be careful these days.
We have to be careful. We have to be careful. You know what? I think I'll just
give an innocuous.
You know what? You guys can fill it in. I think you'll know.
Okay.
Anyway, it's a collection of stories. Again, the title: Break Any Woman Down. Each story about black women and their various experiences in the world, which all can be very, very different. This first story is called Melvin in the Sixth Grade. And it's about a little girl who moves to a new town and is the only black girl in her class. Mm-hmm. I think there's a Latina girl, there may be a couple of other cultures present, but she's the only African American there. And she's from L.A., and she dresses very black and speaks very black and is really sort of an outcast in this school. There's a boy that she's just crazy in love with.
He's from Kentucky?
And it's, yes, yeah, he's from Kentucky. It's the funniest thing. And his name's Melvin, and he is just about as white can be. Yeah. And he loves country music, and he wears a rhinestone-studded denim jacket and cowboy boots, and he gets picked on an awful lot too. But for whatever reason, she just loves him, and he's been very tender with her and the only person who's really accepted her so far at her new school. They get hassled a lot for hanging out together, and eventually the kids, because this is sixth grade, the kids beat him up. For who he is and for hanging out with her and et cetera, just the kind of juvenile thing that you see all the time. And I'm going to do something that I rarely do, which is read the end of the story.
okay, Philip?
Oh, I've read this. I read the
book. He read the book. So.
Oh, okay.
In fact, I quoted from this story 2 years ago.
Yeah. You did?
Yes,
I can't believe I don't
remember.
It's
a great story. Yeah.
I can't believe I don't remember.
That's why we have to have reruns all the time for the show so people can remember.
Okay, so this is after the fight. They've beat him up, and she's mad. She's real mad. And she's just walking on her way home and having this little fantasy to herself. And she gets home and finds her brother there. So I'm going to start from right after the fight. And I'm going to read the last page and a half of the story. And it's, you know, it's not a novel, so I'm not giving away the whole. Okay. I walked up the hill to my house and replayed Melvin's fight. Only in my mind, it wasn't Melvin's fight. It became my fight. I imagined I had on a bad outfit, windowpane pants and a leather jacket, new, not used, and a large, perfectly round afro like the one Foxy Brown had when she pulled a gun from it and blew away some white man who was messing with her. Owen was obsessed with Pam Grier and her big breasts, and I was awed by her ability to whoop ass. People who messed with Foxy were sorry, all right. Just when they thought she was all brown sugar in a halter top, she had a gun or a karate kick to set them straight. Listen, I said. I was talking to myself. All y'all mothers better leave Melvin alone. That's right, I cussed. And I did say mother, not mother. It's the way I speak, dumbasses. And unless you want your butt kicked, you best to leave me and my man alone. Who you calling a nigger? I swung around and pointed a gun at the nearest palm tree. That's what I thought. I kept replaying my and Melvin's fight. When I got in the house, I was surprised to see Owen at the refrigerator, home from work early, drinking milk from a carton. You're not supposed to be doing that, Mama said. Mama said, he mimicked. You always got to do everything everybody say, goody goody. Who were you talking to, anyway? I put my books down on the dining room table, round and glass. I didn't want to stop my daydream. Melvin was holding my hand. Darling, I guess you told them what side of the sidewalk they can spit on, didn't you? I went to the cabinet for a glass and poured myself a glass of milk dramatically to show Owen how it was supposed to be done. He thumped me on the head. You still ain't told me who you was talking to all loud. I drank my milk down in two gulps, washed my glass out then and there because Mama liked her kitchen kept neat, and then I picked up my books so I could go to my room and get out of my torn green pants. Nobody, okay? I wasn't saying anything to anybody. I was just talking to myself. Trippin', he said, making his way to his room. He hardly seemed fazed by anything, not even moving to the suburbs. Hey, I said, Owen. What? Isn't it weird going to school with all these white people sometime? Don't it make you feel... My voice trailed off. I was looking for the word. Bad? Doesn't it make you feel bad? What? Owen rolled his eyes. I'm graduating this year, Ave. I ain't stunting these white folks. He went into his room and closed the door, and soon I could hear Peebo Bryson blaring from his stereo. I'm so into you, I don't know what I'm going to do. Stuntin', Owen said. Stuntin' meant studying. I repeated the word in my head. I'd heard the word my whole life from my grandmamas, mama, daddy, everybody, but when Owen said it then, stuntin', it sounded like a word he'd just made up. For the first time, I really heard what the kids in school heard when I spoke. Owen sounded strange to me, from someplace else using that word. Part of a language I knew, but was already beginning to forget.
Hmm. Very nice.
Yeah, that's going to be another great reading that, you know, next year when she comes.
I hope so.
Yeah,
oh, I hope she comes.
Oh, she's coming. We've already organized that. Yeah.
All right.
Wow.
Oh. They're all very raw and very, you know.
So what is it? So tell me now, what is it you like so much about this?
About this collection? Yeah. Well, like I said, it's kind of like a window into a world that, you know, you see all the time. I mean, we live in a predominantly white community here. And we, you know, you see things in the media and you see things. I've had very little. I've maybe had in my whole 31 years, you know, from kindergarten on, I've maybe had four black friends, not acquaintances, but, you know, friends that people I consider friends. I've maybe had four black friends in my life. But, you know, black people are everywhere. That's and right. They have a whole entire culture that we may think we see, but we're really very separate from and very isolated from. And not
black people know white culture very well. White people don't know black culture.
That's exactly right. Yeah. That's exactly right. And that's why I think it's so important. And after I read this book, I said, God, I want to read every book by every young black woman. What is this experience? I mean, I'm a young woman and I have an experience in this world. And here's someone who shares all this stuff with me, but has had a completely separate experience that I can never, even though I've seen and can maybe imagine, I can't really identify with.
Yeah.
And to see it, I mean, this is how you learn things. I mean, this is how you learn about people, and this is how you gain acceptance, and this is how you tolerance is bred and friendships accrue. And
she's also a master of voices. There's a lot of different people that she just manages to channel from the first person narration. She's really good at that.
Yeah.
Yeah, she's a real master at that.
Yeah.
All right. So tell us again the writer and
Dana Johnson, Break Any Woman Down, and it won the Flannery O'Connor Award.
Yeah, rightly so.
All right. Very good.
Yeah.
Well, Philip, you want to take another turn?
I have a book that is one of the best books I read in quite a long time. It's a very unusual book. Again, how do you find books? I saw the author who I've read many other works by. Give a reading from this at a recent writers' conference, and I didn't even know this book existed, though it's been around for a while. It's called In Fond Remembrance of Me by Howard Norman, who is the author of the novel The Bird Artist. A lot of people might remember him from that.
Yeah, I read The Bird Artist.
Yeah, it was nominated for a National Book Award.
I knew that's why his name looked familiar.
Yeah. And the subtitle is called A Memoir of Myth and Uncommon Friendship in the Arctic. Now, I first came to know of Howard Norman through his translations of Inuit and Cree poetry. Fabulous, fabulous work. Very, very funny and accomplished. And then I started to read his novels when he started writing novels, two of which had been nominated for National Book Awards. And this is a memoir of himself and of another person, a woman named Helen Tanizaki. And it's about his first attempts to do translation from Inuit storytelling. And he found himself in a motel with a Japanese woman who was over a decade older than he was. And they discovered that they were both there, her for a Japanese publisher and him for an English publisher, there to translate stories by the very same storyteller and the exact same kind of stories. Now, Helen was a very accomplished translator of Inuit poetry into the Japanese. And this was Howard Norman's first attempt, and he was, let's just say, callow youth, unprepared, a real dope. And her relationship with him is a very, very funny. And also with in their relationship and his relationship with the storyteller, as he whose name is Mark Nunquak. He said it would be quite Mark Nunquak absolutely adored Helen and could scarcely tolerate my presence. And there is not a splinter of exaggeration in saying as much. And the other thing about this is a sort of a tragedy in that Helen is dying of stomach cancer. And so this is the last time she will ever be doing any translating at the same time that it's Howard Norman's first. And she really... As ill-prepared linguistically and emotionally as he is for this job, she also sees something in him, and she kind of takes him under her wing in a kind of very sort of harsh way, because she's got a cruel wit and doesn't suffer fools very lightly at all. And there's two little sections here with them talking, and then I want to read one of Mark Nunquak's stories, which were fabulous. So anyway, they're taking a walk, and they're taking a walk accompanied by an Inuit man named George, who has he's driving a pickup truck behind them, and he's got a gun in case a polar bear comes around, because he wants to protect them from being eaten. George had a rifle in the front seat with him. One had to be alert for polar bears. Helen had paid George $20 Canadian. He kept about 30 yards or so behind us. Today, at least right now, Helen said, I have an unusual amount of stamina and want to take the longest walk possible. Sounds good, I said. If you get eaten by a bear, who should I telephone with the news? And come to think of it, nobody. That would simplify things. And that's the way she talks. Now they're continuing along. This was in November and turning out to be a day of darkening clouds and temperature drop and on occasion gusting snow, when it had begun with sharp sunlight glinting off the water. I've done my homework, Helen said. I bet you haven't. How so? Can you name the local shorebirds, even though we aren't going to see them for the most part? I can name a few. Helen closed her eyes and recited. Semi-palmated plover, Hudsonian godwit, yellow legs, no, that would be lesser yellow legs, ruddy turnstone, red-necked phalarope, snipe, short-billed dewitcher. I get the hint, Helen. Dunlin, semi-palmated, and least and silt sandpipers. Those are the most common. Is it your experience that birdwatchers can be the most competitive people on Earth? I'm not competitive, Helen said. With you, for instance. How challenging might that be? And there are a lot of these sorts of exchanges. The other thing that goes on in this book, and these are absolutely wonderful stories, are the stories of Mark Nonkok. Now, Mark Nonkok tells stories. It's a whole series of stories, and there are about 10 of them, 11 of them translated in this book, about Noah. And in Mark Nonkok's stories, Noah, his ark gets lost, and he comes to the Arctic, and he gets caught in the winter in the ice. And Noah is not a good anthropologist. In fact, Noah just doesn't get it. And he's always getting into trouble. And of course, when the Inuit hear that he's got this boat filled with animals, they are so excited because people starve in the winter for lack of food. So they want to eat the animals, and Noah won't share them. You know,
and there
are lots of stories like this, where a shaman, you know, runs circles around Noah, or all sorts of things go on. And I'm just going to read one of these, and every one of these is hysterically funny and like nothing you could ever imagine. Noah and the Flood. One day, just before winter arrived, some villagers saw a lot of seagulls swirling up from a big wooden boat. Hey, look. Let's go out and see why the gulls landed there. Let's go look at this boat close up. Should we bring spears? A man said. Yes, another man said. The villagers paddled out in kayaks to the boat. When they got there, a man appeared on deck. My name is Noah, this man said. Go away. What's this boat called? It's called an ark. Go away, this Noah shouted down. Is your family with you? Three people stood next to Noah now. This is my wife. My son, my daughter, Noah said. Go away! Why are you here? A village man asked. Where we come from, there was a big flood, said Noah's wife. We got on this ark and floated away in the rain. Who built this boat? A man said. My husband, said Noah's wife. Why did you have to leave home? People all around us were behaving badly, doing bad things. Our strongest spirit, God, caused a flood and they drowned. Everybody drowned except us and all the animals on the ark. What kind of animals? A village man said. With this, a lot of big animals and colorful birds appeared on the deck of the boat. It's good we brought our spears, a village man said.
Gosh.
Push those animals into the water. We'll get them before they sink away. We'll catch some, kill them, and eat them. No, said Noah. What did people do where you come from? What made this god so angry? A man asked. They were greedy, said Noah. They killed each other. They stole things from each other. The villagers all were laughing hard. They laughed hard, and the laughing went on a long time. In a village north of here, a man finally said, somebody stabbed somebody else. But we didn't have a flood. In a village north of here, somebody took somebody else's wife. They ran off together. We didn't have a flood. In a village north of here, somebody hit somebody else on the head with a rock. He died. But we didn't have a flood. In a village north of here, a man reined up his dogs badly. The dogs got away and choked and died, and we didn't have a flood. In a village north of here, a woman poisoned her husband and ran off with the man who'd provided the poison. No flood. No flood. Where we come from, there was a flood, Noah's wife said. Soon winter arrived. The ark was stuck in the ice. Noah, a man called up, bring your family to our village. Give us a few animals, a few planks of wood. We'll get you through the winter. Otherwise, you'll starve. No, said this Noah. All right, a villager said, but at least let your family come with us. All right, said Noah. The villagers set out with Noah's family, but instead of going to their home village, they traveled to a village to the north. When they arrived, a man said, did you see that big wooden boat out to the sea? Yes, said a man in this new village. Noah, that's his name, is on the boat. This is his wife, his daughter, his son. We're leaving them with you for a while. Now, Noah's wife, son, and daughter were living in this new village. That very night, Noah's wife took out some pieces of food from an animal on the ark. A haunch and neck from a strange animal. These new villagers weren't giving them anything to eat, so they ate this from the ark. Right away, this happened. Noah's wife ran off with a man from the village, but first she knocked the man's wife out with a rock. Noah's son stabbed the man, then tried to run off with that man's wife, but the man knocked Noah's son down. Noah's son ran out and didn't return. Noah's daughter found her brother half dead on the ice a few days later. Soon after, Noah's daughter fed some sled dogs pieces of her clothes soaked in seal oil. The dogs choked and a few dogs died. The next morning, Noah's son and daughter were sent to the next village to the south. But there was no flood. When the ice break arrived, Noah's wife paddled the kayak back to the ark. "Where have you been?" asked Noah. "I ran off with a man from a village to the north," she said. "But finally, I choked him a little and ran off again. And now I'm here. What about our son? What about our daughter?" Noah's wife told Noah all that had happened in that village to the north. "Oh, oh, oh," said Noah, weeping. "Oh, oh, oh." In a few days, the ark was floating free of ice, and Noah's son and daughter paddled out in kayaks. They all floated in the southerly direction, but the ice had cracked the hull planks wide open, and the ark sank away. "Which village should we paddle to?" asked Noah's wife. "Not the village to the north," said Noah's daughter. The village to the south took them in. "What will you do now?" a man asked. "We'll walk in the southerly direction," Noah said. "Yes," said Noah's daughter. "Yes," said Noah's son. "Yes," said Noah's wife. The next day they did that. They never came back. They didn't come back to the village to the north or to the village to the south.
Very good.
Yeah, like 11 of these, and every one of them hysterical, wonderful.
We got to take a break here and do a couple things, and then we'll have more from Philip and Tanya. We're here with Philip Graham, Tanya Liasakos. Occasionally they're here on the program, and they recommend new books, and we'll continue to do that. Programming here, by the way, is made possible by a grant from Strawberry Fields in downtown Urbana. Strawberry Fields Catering Department now offers boxed lunches for professional meetings or casual lunchtime gatherings. Their number is 328-1655. The broadcast is also made possible by a grant from Horeen's Pianos Plus, your Steinway Piano Showroom in Bloomington. Horeen's Pianos Plus offers new and pre-owned pianos by Steinway & Sons, Boston by Steinway, and other fine pianos. Momentarily, we'll have our update on the markets. We'll have news from National Public Radio. Then we'll have more Focus 580. In the meantime, we want to encourage you to go to the telephone and make a call and make a financial contribution to WILL Radio. It is very easy and very quick. 244-9455 is the number. This would be a good day to do it because we have had challenge here from a couple in Urbana who really appreciate Focus 580 and said that they will make a special gift of $200 if we can get 20 others to pledge today. And I'm not quite sure where we are. We'll get an update in the next hour. But the important thing is you can help us meet this challenge. And anyone who calls in with a contribution of $40 or more, we will send with our thanks a book. You can choose fiction or nonfiction. We also have a category of as heard on Focus 580, so you can have your choice. We're told we're halfway to the goal. We need 10 more calls. You can make it happen. 244-9455. We're going to break for an update on the markets. We'll be back. Stay tuned.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM, working with the American farmer, creating products from his crops, creating markets for his crops. ADM, resourceful by nature.
And, you know, you can call in your supports in behalf of agriculture programming at 244-9455.